Hi, I'm Nick Heidfeld, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 723, March 27th, 2017. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by KFC. Finger licking good with a side order of sauerkraut. Back to you, Mr. Sanders of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, how dare Ocon pass Fernando? Can Ferrari do it again? Mercedes is never going to let this happen again. And we've got the special interview of the year. Of course, we're talking Quick Nick. Nick Heidfeld is going to be put together on this show. It's outstanding, so that's why we can't waste any time. This is a fantastic interview. He does everything that we want. Great questions from Nasser, as Nick alluded to. So, Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am very, very excited, sir. I was up at 1 in the morning to watch the season opener. What a Grand Prix. And what a great season opener. I am very happy that Vettel has rattled the Mercedes cage, and I hope we have a very competitive and battle royale between Ferrari and Mercedes all season long. And of course, others who are a little bit behind, and even those who are two laps behind, are welcome to join the party for a Shanghai surprise in 2 weeks. How did you look at the race from the left coast?
Well, you know, the qualifying left me a little bit tearing up, but I was happy. You know, I knew, you know, pole position again, LCH. I was going, oh my God. I was hoping Bottas could out-qualify his number one teammate, but that didn't happen. But to see the Ferrari on the front row, that was a big deal for me. So, and I was happy to see Romain Grosjean really out-qualifying Magnussen. So, and Palmer crying about the Renault, and of course Fernando doing a pretty good job with a really piece of junk.
That is very true. And you know, you said you were surprised with Ferrari on front row. So were they. And LCH on pole obviously was not a surprise. This was his sixth pole in Albert Park and fourth in a row. And his total tally now of pole positions is 62, only three behind Senna. And Michael Schumacher is, of course, numero uno with 68 pole positions. So there's a good chance this year he may enter the historical landmark of travel with the most poles. But this time it was not by half a second or more what he has been used to in the last few years. And what was surprising that Ferrari pole front row was their first front row since 2015 Singapore, when Mercedes somehow forgot how to set up the car for that race. And Bottas and Raikkonen, not bad for number two for their respective teams, were on the second row. Were you expecting much from Kimi?
No, Kimi always does Kimi. But I was hoping that Bottas would challenge for the pole position a little harder, and that didn't happen. But don't get me wrong, new cars, new big tires. I'm going to give him a chance. I'm not going to be a mean person.
Yeah, and Kimi was 0.577 second off the pace of Hamilton before a further 0.5 second gap to the quickest Red Bull of Max Verstappen. And Mr. local hero Daniel Ricciardo, he had a racing weekend from hell. Stinko like a dingo.
He really did.
Yeah, it was like bizarre.
It was a complete disaster.
Yeah, and you know, he like Kimi, he very rarely makes mistakes. So I was very surprised when he, crashed in on Saturday which I thought maybe something broke on the car, but he apparently made a mistake or it just got away from him. Nothing broke on the car. So, and then, you know, also was interesting was you mentioned Romain Grosjean was sixth fastest ahead of Felipe Massa coming back from his retirement. And then the two Toro Rossos of Sainz and Kvyat, and they were split by just 0.025 second, but over 2 seconds of the ultimate pace. And Kvyat, really, he is, I believe, in his fourth year with Red Bull program. He really needs to grab the bull by the horn and dominate Carlos Sainz. Otherwise, you know, it will be a das vidania from Dr. Marco.
I agree, and I was really surprised that Felipe Massa did pretty good.
Yeah, and you mentioned Julian Palmer, so I guess he won't be getting a Christmas card from the host of F1 Weekly after describing his Renault as awful and a disaster. He was the slowest qualifier.
He was the slowest. Very disappointing. But Renault is disappointing me. You know, I can't deny it.
No, I think they will come on strong in the second half. I would like to say the same thing for Honda, but you know, I've already said that for two seasons. So this time I'm going to plead the fifth.
Yes, please save it. I mean, even Mark Webber is now, he's spewing rumors that Fernando may not even stay at McLaren for the entire season.
Well, he's good friends with Nando, as we all know. And this thing has gone in such taken a life of its own, a slow life of its own, that I frankly speaking, I will not be surprised if we hear an announcement that after the summer break, McLaren will go with Mercedes. And who can blame them?
Yeah, that would be... but they've got a contract with Honda. That might not be that easy.
That is very true. But, you know, see, what is interesting, I read that Honda is pumping close to $100 million, including the cost of the engine. I know this from very reliable sources. They are paying Nando's salary. And, you know, he's not on minimum wage at McLaren. So it's going to be, they might be able to work something out, you know, that, you know, money always eases the pain in these situations, but they can always say, you know, once you start qualifying on the second row with Sauber, we'll take you back. But let's see what happens. But now here's a quick comparison of how the teammates did at Albert Park. Romain Grosjean 6th, Kevin Magnussen 17th for, you know, Team Haas. Williams, Felipe Massa 7th, Lance Stroll 19th, but he was making his Grand Prix debut, so we'll cut him some slack. Sauber, Marcus, this was really, I'll tell you what it meant to me. Marcus Ericsson 15 and Antonio Giovinazzi 16. Giovinazzi was very impressive with just one practice session of experience behind him in Australia, and he was only 0.183 slower than teammate Ericsson and was on an even quicker lap before a mistake in the penultimate corner. And you know, the thing is, Clark, I was thinking about, you know, life is not fair, so as we always say, motor racing cannot be fair. I mean, I'm looking at cases like very talented drivers, Esteban Gutierrez, Felipe Nasser, Kevin Magnussen. They've had quite a bit of opportunity to do something, okay? And Giovinazzi, his performance really reminded me of how Gilles Villeneuve broke into Formula One. He came from Formula Atlantic. Nobody knew who he was, except James Hunt, who had raced against him in a Formula 3 race in Canada. And there he was qualifying for the British Grand Prix ahead of team's number 2 driver, Mr. Jochen Mass. So once, and of course, the very next race, he's a Ferrari driver. And Antonio Giovinazzi is already in the Ferrari driver program. And I would love to see this kid keep doing what he's doing and get a seat at Ferrari next year. That would be fantastic.
That would be fantastic, and I was glad. Now, did you think that Wehrlein was wussing, or Wehrlein honestly had some back issues?
No, I'm sure, you know, driving these cars, he obviously was not able to get up to full, you know, physical fitness and also had some issues in the preseason. I think he did the right thing, but it's not one of those things that... The team is expecting him to be back in Shanghai. But man, if he, for whatever reason, he's not there and Antonio Giovinazzi does another performance like this, then, you know, he may be back in DTM.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and you know, you look at the Esteban Ocon, you said he had the audacity of passing Nando, this is how the youngins, you know, they have to stamp the authority that, hey, look at me.
I know. And I was actually, that was probably the best pass of the entire race with Hulkenberg right there as well. That was almost exciting.
And, you know, nothing against Pascal Wehrlein, but he already has taken one hit to the body, to borrow a phrase from Mr. Jagger, is Force India went with a lesser experienced driver in Esteban Ocon and bypassing this guy. And, you know, the word, if you read about that decision, is they thought Ocon had a better commitment, better attitude. So he needs to be careful. Wehrlein has to pump up the volume pretty soon.
I concur.
What else would you like to know?
Well, I think we should go right to race day, because qualifying with Lewis Hamilton on pole, the only thing I was happy about is Grosjean on sixth and Vettel on the front row. That was all I had. I felt bad for Fernando. And, you know, I don't know what McLaren is going to do, to be honest with you, but we must move on.
Yes, I do want to ask you a question before we go on the race. Before the start of the race and the pre-race festivities, did you miss Bernie Ecclestone?
I didn't even think about Bernie.
Same here. Not to say, you know, he shouldn't be there, but I mean, tremendous contribution. And he will show up to some of the races. But, you know, life, sun comes up and life goes on no matter what happens.
Absolutely. Life will go on. And Bernie should take a day off. Relax. It's over. He doesn't own it anymore. Liberty Media does. And we're going to be eating burgers and hot dogs very, very soon in the Paddock Club.
There you go. Clark?
Yeah?
Now you can start the race, sir.
I think we should get to the race, Nasser. What did you think of that start? You have to admit, Lewis Hamilton said he'd been practicing. And he did. I was hoping he would have a bad start and Vettel would take the lead. But for me, the impressive part was Vettel pulling into second, keeping Bottas out, and how well the Ferrari kept up with Hamilton.
Well, you know, shortly after the start, it was obvious, writing was on the wall, that this was not going to be business as usual victory for Mercedes. And there were two factors, and you mentioned them right now. One was Seb staying right behind LCH, and the other was Bottas was not a threat to the Ferrari driver. Now, in the past, you know, we've seen if one of the Ferrari drivers fall back to third, within three corners they are back, you know, 1-2, or at least within a lap. But this was not going to happen here, and I just had a inkling that, you know, this is going to be a good race in terms of who will win the race.
I agree. No, it was exciting to watch the Ferrari stick with Lewis Hamilton. I mean, it was impressive. They've done a great job. I think they're almost there.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, you know, Pirelli has come a long way. Their tires don't fall off a cliff after so many laps now. But, you know, even when LCH was complaining quite a bit before his stop, he was complaining about the grip and the tires and all that. And after the race, he said it was his decision to come in before Seb. And I also heard him say that, you know, Mercedes will have to sort out this issue why they cannot make the tires work as well as the Ferrari. So it was just one race, but it was a good race. It's sort of a notice has been served to Toto Wolff and his, you know, people that, hey, the horse will gallop ahead of the wolves.
Well, I'm telling you, this could be an exciting season if this was for real and Mercedes is perhaps on the back foot with these tires. And if they degrade on the Mercedes quicker than the Ferrari, we are in for a great fight.
Yeah, and the thing about these two drivers, you know, these are not drivers. These are drivers who, like many other great drivers, they just don't know when to slow down. I mean, they're going to stick it to each other if they can. And so it's going to be a great fight.
I agree. I like what Vettel said at the end on the podium, that the cars are great. He wants to keep, you know, you're fighting, you're pushing. It's really what we wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a long time coming. And I just hope that this is not like Australia is not like what Singapore was in 2005, 2015. But I think given the pace of the Ferrari in preseason testing, and even from that time, Lewis has been saying Ferrari are the favorites, and in Sebastian Vettel, they have the man who can stick it to Lewis and Bottas.
Absolutely, I think so. I think Bottas is going to be a great number two, just like Kimi Raikkonen and the rest of the number twos in the world. But it's going to be a very interesting event when we get to Europe. And these wider cars at Monaco is going to be exciting.
Yeah, and you know, last year Ferrari made the wrong call on pit strategy and paid the price. And now, after this year's race, they are on the sunny side of Albert Park. So that's very interesting.
I agree. The only disappointment I have is Red Bull. Renault needs to pick up the slack a little bit for Red Bull. They've got a great chassis. The aero package is good. Verstappen definitely played a role in keeping Lewis Hamilton at bay. And Vettel said that Verstappen is the key to the championship.
Yeah, but you know, even Lewis said that Max or no Max, it was going to be very difficult to keep Sebastian Vettel behind him. So we'll see how it works out. And I have to say, Valtteri Bottas drove a smart race, you know, cool, calculating race, and was on the podium in his first appearance for Mr. Wolff and Niki. And he looked real fast in the closing stages, and I'm not sure if he was sent a multi-2-1 style text message. But I think he will win races this year, but will take a few races to give his teammate a real finish sauna.
I like that.
Yeah, you know, Kimi finished fourth, which is pretty good, but 22 seconds behind his race-winning teammate. But one thing about Kimi, you know, he's a man of no BS. You know, he said it was all his fault. He didn't know what he was doing, this and that, which is quite a bit of, you know, talk from him. But, you know, we'll see how it works out.
You think Kimi and Valtteri will become good friends on the second row?
Yeah, it's possible. But I think Kimi would rather have Max Verstappen. They go together, and they were looking to go together here also. But I think Antonio Giovinazzi will be well advised to bring some gelato for Kimi for the next race and maybe a full season long supply for 2018.
Keep up the good work, Max.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if they keep Kimi, you know, for 2018 also. And they may do that if Sebastian Vettel wins the championship.
They could, but they, you know, well, we've had this conversation for how long? So Ferrari does not take chances.
But Sebastian Vettel will. Now, what did you make of Mr. Lance Stroll, man from up north?
I was a little disappointed. I wanted him to slap Felipe Massa around and show people that, you know, he's at Williams. You know, Williams is a top team.
Well, it used to be a top team.
Well, they'll be a top team again. They have Patty Lowe.
Yeah, it will take time. But, you know, I think Lance did the right thing. You know, he made a great start and jumped from 20th to 14th on the opening lap. And he was running in 13th place and then retired with front brake issues. You know, he did have some issues in qualifying. But I think, you know, I have to say something. You know, when we met him at the Las Vegas Cruiser, he looked like a young kid, you know, up and coming. But now he looks like a young man, which he is, you know, at 18 years of age. But grown quite a bit as a young man, and I wish him all the best. The guy is quick. There's no question about it.
I agree, or he wouldn't have the job. There's no doubt. He's quick, but he needs to stamp his authority.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's good that he is with a driver who has a lot of experience. I mean, it's not like he's with Nico Hülkenberg, who's also trying to prove a point, you know. So maybe there will be less throat-slitting between the teammates.
Correct.
Now, Sergio Marchionne said after the race, and I quote, "It was about time. I am delighted for the team and for our Tifosi who stood by us throughout this whole period. We've been waiting for this victory for almost a year and a half. Hearing the national anthem again was very moving," end of quote. So this means that hopefully we will see Arriva Bene next year also.
I think so too. I think, I think they're going to get more than one victory this year. I think this is, if everything goes well, we'll see what happens in China. And of course, when they get back to Europe, for me, that's really the test of time. But this could be it. This could be the, you know, Sebastian Vettel might swing things around over at Ferrari.
Yeah, that will be fantastic. You know, it'll be good for Ferrari. It will be good for the sport. It'll be good for Seb. And, you know, we're looking at his fifth world championship if he can pull it off. I mean, that's very, very impressive.
It is very impressive. But trust me, Mercedes is going to bounce back from this problem, and they're going to come up with a solution.
No, of course. They're not going to roll over and play dead right away. It's not going to happen. But Ferrari also recorded the fastest lap in Australia with Raikkonen at 126.538. And interestingly, Hamilton's best lap was only sixth fastest. Even Kvyat had a faster lap in fourth place. And listen to this. Compared to Kimi's time of 126.538, the faster Honda-powered McLaren of Van Dorn, Stoffel Van Dorn, recorded a time of 129.440, almost 3 seconds off in their third year. And that is very, very sad.
It's very sad. And 3 seconds is a lot.
Clark, 1 second is a lifetime in racing at that level. 3 seconds is, you know, stay home.
So, let's see. I'm at a loss for words on why Honda is not capable of pulling this out.
I just can't, you know, it's hard to believe that this is the same company that was winning races with Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost. Nobody could touch them. And then they were with Williams, and Williams was winning a lot of races. And they had time to develop this thing, you know, especially after the first year. Let's just say first year was, you know, totally new technology and all that. They had a second year to get up to speed. And they did make a big improvement. But now they have gone in reverse, and it's hard to believe.
I agree. I think the biggest problem is the Japanese culture could be at odds with the McLaren culture, and that could be a problem as well.
You know, this is brought up a lot, but, you know, hey, this is the same culture that was powering Prost and Mansell and Piquet and Senna. I think where the McLaren and Eric Bouye is pretty vocal about this, where they don't want this is how Honda and Toyota do their things. I mean, if you look at Toyota, especially Toyota, in the automobile business, they have not gone, you know, like recently Peugeot, Citroën bought out the GM European operation, Vauxhall in England, and
right.
Opel in Germany. Volkswagen bought out Skoda and Seat. Toyota has not done that. They have just, you know, developed their own line of car. They came out with Lexus. So they don't want to do their own thing, and more power to them if they can do it right. And Honda, that's what I think Eric Bouye's big pet peeve is, that they are they don't want to outsource anything. Everything has to be in-house or, you know, made in Japan. But, you know, again, I have to say, when you are trying to win at that level, you have to get the very best you can for the money. I mean, if the designer is from, you know, like Toyota, when they first came, they hired this guy, Gustav Brunner, who's a very well-respected designer. And they had their first Formula One car scored a point on their debut. And they had a pretty good program with Mika Salo and Alan McNish. And then they went and paid $25 million to Ralph Schumacher, and it went out of control. So, I would love to see Honda do something. Apparently, they have now put together a special project to, you know, find out what the issue is. And, I mean, this has been going on for seasons now. But I frankly think what's going to happen is I don't think they're going to come out with an engine that, Alonso is on pole. He can be if it's in the rain. But I will not be surprised if they decide to go separate ways.
I agree. I think Fernando will leave. Button will come back.
And, you know, talking of Fernando leaving, Bottas' career contract with Mercedes is for 1 year, 2018, which me is thinking that maybe they have already signed Nando or Sebastian Vettel for 2018, because both of these youths are in their final year of their contract.
So exciting, so wonderful, Nasser. Keep up the good work.
And victory was number, this is very impressive, victory was number 225 for Ferrari and number 43 for Sebastian. And Ferrari's first victory in Australia was scored by Gerhard Berger in 1987. So it's all good, Clark, as we move forward to the next race. Of the 20 drivers, 7 retired from the race. Shall we let people know what happened? They may already know this.
I think it's good, yes.
Yeah, Alonso and K-Mag. Kevin Magnussen due to suspension issues. Lance Stroll breaks. Ricciardo, Ericsson, Julian Palmer, and Romain Grosjean all had engine issues. Vettel now leads over Hemi in the championship. No-brainer, 25-18. Bottas is third on 15. In the Constructors' Championship, Ferrari leads with 37. Mercedes second on 33. And Red Bull is third with 10, courtesy of fifth place for VMAX. And interestingly, you know, there were two drivers in this race who made their debut in Australia, and both were on the podium in their very first Formula One race of their life, LCH and Kevin Magnussen. And I'm beginning to feel for Kevin Magnussen, you know, the kind of weekend he had, especially the race. I mean, it's looking like more of Esteban Gutierrez at Haas F1. Again, only one race, but I was not expecting him to come in and blow away Romain Grosjean, but at least, you know, be close to him. But I think he's losing the plot.
I know. I think so, too.
And Mr. Kvyat, Tavarish Kvyat, now has more. He's not the most, let's just say, experienced Russian driver. He now has more F1 starts than his comrade in Alonso's BFF from Abu Dhabi, Mr. Vitaly Petrov.
How is Petrov?
I know he went to race in DTM, and then I think he's doing something else. But you don't hear much about him these days.
Very true. And I heard Kubica wants to test a Formula One car.
Again?
Yeah.
Well, we'll hear about Kubica from Nick Heidfeld.
Okay, that's true. Okay. Keep up the good work, Nas. But no, fantastic race. For me, yeah. I mean, just to see the Tifosi happy, the bells ringing in Maranello, and of course the Pope giving him the blessing. No, this was a great race, even though for some people, apparently, it was very boring.
Yeah, to each his own. You know, different people look at it from different point of view. I know some people like passes, some don't care. Some people like sound, some don't. So variety is the spice of life.
I agree. Just the fact that Mercedes didn't win was probably enough for me to make me happy.
Yeah, and Ferrari's victories. You know, I mean, everybody wants to see Ferrari win racing in Formula One. That's for sure.
And what about Toto Wolff? You think he's going to get some anger management classes?
He could hire Tony Stewart. He has time on his hand these days.
That's good. Tony Stewart is a very good teacher.
Yeah, but Toto Wolff has his standard, you know, banging his fist on the table. I've seen him do a few times, especially when Lewis and Nico would, you know, clash or do something to each other.
Let's hope we get some of that too this year. Anyway, Nasser, why don't we take a quick break and come back with this unbelievably great coup for F1 Weekly.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll be back after these brief messages.
Thinking of a career in Formula One? Already have a motorsports job, but thinking about jumping into F1? Our team at Motorsports Career Advisor recently finalized the results of our interviews with several top motorsports recruiters and has compiled them into our 2017 Motorsports Resource Guide called The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. If you've heard our radio spots before, maybe you don't know that up to 1,000 action-oriented motorsports enthusiasts contact us every month to get our guides. But it was our motorsports recruiter partners that challenged us to go even further. And here's what they convinced us to do. For a limited time, we're giving away a pre-release sample of our 2017 resource guide, The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. Get yours now at F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com. F1 is extremely competitive. Be the first to see the guide and jump ahead of your job competition. Go to F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com now for the 2017 pre-release before the countdown expires, and you'll get a sneak peek at a guide that others will soon pay to receive. That's F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And the MotoGP season also started this weekend in Qatar under the lights. And this was won by Spanish rider Maverick Viñales on his Yamaha debut. Italian riders were second and third, Andrea Dovizioso on a Ducati and Valentino Rossi on the second factory Yamaha, respectively. And Rossi had started from 10th, and his new teammate, Mr. Vinales, was very surprised that Rossi made it to the podium, but that's what Rossi is good at. Honda rider Marc Marquez was fourth. His teammate and fellow Spaniard Danny Pedrosa completed the top five. Opening, this was very interesting. I don't know if you've seen the race, but opening laps of the race were led by French rider Johann Zarco on his MotoGP debut on a Yamaha, private Yamaha, or satellite Yamaha, as they called them, before crashing out. Now, a few years ago, Clark, there were three MotoGP races in the United States. This year, there is only one at COTA, Circuit of the Americas, Austin, Texas, on April 23rd. Now, the NASCAR boys were going Kelly in Fontana. Young man on pole was Kyle Larson from Sacramento for Chip Ganassi Racing. He actually won both the Monster Cup, which is a new name for the Sprint Cup, and the Xfinity Series races over the weekend. So very impressive weekend for this young kid from Sacramento and for Chip Ganassi. And they have retained their Target sponsorship in NASCAR, but not in IndyCar. And very easy to understand that decision.
I understand that decision completely.
Have you ever been to Fontana, in all seriousness?
Seriously, I have not.
I would highly recommend you or anybody who has never been to an oval race. We're talking IndyCars right now. It will blow you away. I'm telling you, the speed, and it's unbelievable.
I believe it.
It's a two-mile track, so you can get a view most of the thing. Track was built by Roger Penske. Now, of course, it's owned by the France family. And it's beautiful setting. It's very close to an old, I think, like a Kaiser steel plant or some abandoned Kaiser steel plant. So, lay of the land is beautiful.
I'll take a weekend off and go take a look.
Yeah, and it's SoCal, you know. How can you go wrong going driving on 101 South?
Of course, I'll stop at Harris Ranch.
There you go.
Thank you. So, there you have it, Nas. Keep up the good work with the outstanding Motorsports Mondial. But, of course, now we have to talk about the kahuna of interviews.
Yes, my thanks, first of all, to Mr. Nick Heidfeld for his time. This was like a serious walk-in interview, and also to the friendly folks at Sebring for giving us this opportunity. Now, what had happened, I was chasing his PR guy at Daytona, could not hook up with him. And at this level, you know, you don't want to go behind their back. And then I went again all day long at Sebring. The whole idea was to interview Nick Heidfeld again and again. And then evening came and the car broke down. So I said, you know, this might be a good time to talk to him. So I ran into Mr. Hugh Deschanel, who runs that operation, and you know who he is. And I asked him, you know, possible to do an interview with Nick Heidfeld. He said, well, you know, after this. And he said, this car might be fixed in 15, 20 minutes or maybe half hour. So I basically said, it's not going to happen. And then I kept running into the same couple of team mechanics or team personnel looking for this PR guy. And I kid you not, I was walking away from the track after spending eight hours trying to get an interview with Nick Heidfeld, and one of this team members came rushing to me. And he says, hey, I can tell you where he's sitting. And he told me, so I walked there. He was talking to Sebastian Buemi and Neil Gianni, who were his teammates. And when these two guys got up to go and were talking to somebody else, I sneaked in. And Nick Heidfeld was very nice, you know. He says, have a seat, please. And a very nice conversation. He answered almost all the questions. And what he did not answer, very easy to understand. So my thanks to him. And he's very happy to be racing in Formula E and sports car and really enjoying motorsports in the U.S.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Sebring with Nick Heidfeld from Mönchengladbach. Nick, nice to meet you. How is the weekend going for you?
It's 2.5 hours to go, and unfortunately we had too many problems. We are many, many laps down. As you can see here, not the listeners, but we all three drivers are here, so there's nobody driving out there. We might get out in the end for the last 1.5 hours or so and just check if the car's okay.
How do you find the circuit? It's an old airport. Is it very bumpy?
I love it. I've been here before, and yes, it is bumpy, but it's drivable. There are other circuits in Europe, Portimao, for example. There are not many bumps, but there's one or two bumps. When you go over them, you think, your back will break. Here is obviously bumpy, but it's part of the circuit. It makes the circuit and it's very enjoyable.
Now, you've raced here in Formula One also. How do you find the American racing scene compared to Europe?
I love it here. This is why I'm here. After F1, I didn't imagine that it would be so cool to drive here. But after our joint rebellion, we did a few years here. We've been to Laguna Seca, to Sebring, Petit Le Mans. And in the back of my mind, I was always looking forward and hoping to come back. And then for this year, Rebellion decided to do WEC and some races here in the US. And I was all in to do the races over here. And luckily, I had the chance to come over and do not many, but a couple of races.
Now, talking of Laguna Seca, how thrilling is going through the corkscrew?
I've been there once and it was amazing. But what I found even nicer is that the circuit as a whole is fantastic. Everybody speaks about corkscrew. It's a special corner or a special complex. But all the rest of the circuit is amazing as well. A lot of up and down. It's got a very nice flow and it was one of the coolest races I've ever done.
Have you had some time to travel in California?
No, not yet. Maybe this summer I will go with the family, come to the US and spend a bit more time, and maybe then I have some time.
Okay, now, last 20 years have been very good for German motorsports. What got you interested in racing? Was there interest in the family?
Yes, my father was into motorsport. He did a bit of go-karts himself, but just as a hobby, and he liked motorcycle driving. Yeah, so he likes motorsport, and this is how I got into it. Actually, when I was 4.5 years, my two brothers, I'm the middle one, got a little motorbike as a Christmas present, and this is how the motorsport stuff started. I had two accidents in motocross, and then my mother said this is too dangerous, and then we had a little break and then started karting when I was 8.5.
Now, you won championships in Formula Ford, Formula 3 and Formula 3000. Which series played the most important part in improving you as a racing driver?
I think Formula 3. Formula 3 nowadays, but also back then, is already very, very professional. From the drivers, from the teams, from how you have to perform to succeed, from the level of engineering. And yeah, I think if you make it in Formula 3, if you're very successful there as a young kid, you dream that you can make your hobby into your job. It is still, this is the thing most of us love most, and if you can do this as your job, earn money and do what you love most, that's fantastic. And this is what I thought about Formula 3. If you make it there, you have a chance.
Okay. Now, in Formula 3000, you race against Montoya, and Raikkonen was your teammate in Formula 1. You've raced against both of these people. Between the two, who had the most talent?
Difficult to say, because Montoya was not my teammate, so I cannot say. I think most people would say naturally that Montoya is more gifted, but I'm not sure. He definitely is. He goes in a car, he has very good car control, but both of them are amazing drivers. And even though the season where I fought with Montoya for the Formula 3000 Championship, we had a lot of close fights and didn't really get on very well, but this, for me, is the season I enjoy most in my motorsport career, because it was such a tense fight, and it was great.
And how would you rate Raikkonen as a race pure natural talent against Montoya?
I don't want to do that, because I didn't drive with both of them in the same team. What I can say about Kimi, because he was my teammate in Sauber, that he impressed me, especially with his race pace. From the beginning on, he was very strong in races, and he still is nowadays. He doesn't make many mistakes. He's very consistent and very efficient and good.
Did he talk a little bit to you?
Yes, of course. We got on very, very well. It was we had a lot of fun. Yeah.
You know, he hardly says anything. Anyway, in Formula One, Alain Prost was your first team boss. What was your experience with him, both on personal and professional basis?
I think it was very difficult for him, because the team struggled massively. I think in this year, the first year where I joined the team and Formula One, we had even less points than Minardi, who back then always struggled the most, unfortunately. And I think it was very difficult for Alain to change things around, and you could feel it in his mood. It put pressure on him, and I think even nowadays when I see him, he looks very fit, and he is very fit, and he needs this to level out. I think if he doesn't do sport, he can go quite crazy. I respect him massively for what he's done in Formula One, and yeah, he's a very special person.
Okay. Jean Alesi has been your teammate. Was he the most emotional teammate you ever had?
For me, he was the one that was most different in the car and outside the car. He was a very nice guy, but I remember very well once in Ost where we had a race together, where actually he was instructed not to overtake me because he still had to do one stop and I already stopped, and we had a good chance to maybe score some points, and he tried to overtake me and we both crashed out, which from my perspective was clearly his mistake, and he made a big mess and fuss about it. And then to the contrary, in France, when we had a race in Manicourt, I fucked up and I crashed into him, and it was my mistake. And it was his home race and in Manicourt, and he could have like killed me, you know, in the French press. And he was very nice. He said, yeah, it can happen. And yeah, he's a very, very special character. Outside of the car, he's very nice. If he puts a visor down, he becomes a proper racing driver.
Yeah. Okay, now, during the 2001 season, you scored more points than Kimi, but McLaren Mercedes took him for the 2002 season. Did you ask Norbert Hogg reason for their decision? Because many people were expecting you to get the seat, and I believe you were part of the Mercedes driver development program.
Yes, I spoke to Norbert before, and he assured me that things are looking good and I should just keep doing my job, and I did, and then they took him, and to be honest, I didn't really speak a lot about it. It was done, it was over, and I would have loved to go there, but on the other side, Kimi deserves it as well, and he's become world champion afterwards. He's a fantastic driver, so I'm happy for him, but of course I would have liked to go there as well.
Now, talking of McLaren, they are having a huge problem with more than a huge problem with Honda these days, and there are now talks they may go back to Mercedes. How do you view this situation?
I find it tough to see, because I did a lot of testing in F1 for McLaren, and for me it's been the best team I've ever worked with. Later on I was with BMW, who were also fantastic, but back in the late 90s when they were winning championships with Häkkinen, I was testing there. It was an amazing team, and to see them struggling now is tough. I want them to, even they didn't take me and they took Kimi, I would like to see them win.
Okay, let me get your opinion on John Dennis. You know, once upon a time, Kimi said he's a control freak. So I asked one day Martin Brundle, who also drove for McLaren, I asked him if Kimi is correct. He said, no, he's wrong. Ron is ultra, you know, like clean freak. How did you view him in terms of dealing with him?
I have the feeling that he didn't like me enough to put me in the car. But he's the best team boss I've ever had. Of course, he's special, but to be successful in such an environment, there are not many people successful. You need to be special in a certain way. And what I did like is that the team was fantastically organized, but it was not like it was seen from the outside, like everything was sterile and there was no fun, and it was not like that. The organization was perfect, but being with the guys, with the mechanics, with the engineers, we had a lot of fun. It was a fantastic environment.
Now, BMW Sauber's only win came in Canada, and this went to your teammate Robert Kubica. Oh, it could have been yours also. Any thoughts at that time that the team wanted him to get the victory? They're out of racing, so you can say now. Silence is golden.
Yes, don't want to speak about it.
Okay, no problem, I understand. Okay, you have 13 podium finishes in Formula One. That's a matter of great accomplishment. How do you look at it? Is that a source of pride or frustration that victory did not come your way?
Well, you have to be... sort of happy with what you achieve, and you have to pinch yourself.
Yeah.
I've achieved a lot compared to other people, and I was very lucky compared to other people. But on the other side, I didn't come into Formula One to only finish on the podium 13 times. My target was to win races and the championship. So I enjoyed it massively. I'm happy to have been on the podium many times, but I regret that I didn't win races and the championship, of course.
If I remember correctly, you had a home pole position, right?
Yeah, one only pole position came at Nürburgring, yeah.
That had to be a great feeling.
Yeah, it was fantastic feeling, but I was always the guy that, for me, the show and this stuff was not that important. So a pole position is nice, but I always worked more for the race.
Now, you're also racing in Formula E. Is driving technique closer to Formula One or sports car racing?
Sorry, can you repeat?
Is the driving technique for Formula E more closer to Formula One or like sports car racing, where you have to manage the car and, you know, endurance race?
I find it more similar to Formula One, or let's call it single-seaters. In sports cars, for me, the car is moving around a lot more, even though Formula E is relatively heavy. But yeah, it's more like Formula One, but it's not the same. We have don't have slicks. We have a lot less power, a lot less downforce, and it's unique. And this is also why I like it a lot. After having had a long career in Formula One and in single seaters, this is completely different. What I like about it is that it's a one-day event. We have practice, quali, race all in one day. Physically, it's not too bad, but mentally, it's a big challenge, but one that is very enjoyable. To work with the team in this short period of time is fantastic, and I think we have a fantastic field of drivers. The level of drivers is very high, which also makes it a lot more enjoyable than if you drive against people that are not really up to speed. And well, for me, they are mainly positive. So circuits, if you ask most drivers in Formula One, they would probably say Singapore is nice, Monaco, like those street circuits, and probably Suzuka and Spa as well. But we only have street circuits in Formula E, and yeah, it's, on top of that, the icing on the cake is the venues we go to. Like this year, later we will go to New York, we go to Montreal, we've been to Moscow, Berlin, Paris, Miami, Long Beach, you know, it's incredible.
My favorite is Punta del Este. How is that town?
I liked it a lot. Unfortunately, we don't go there anymore. It was a very challenging circuit. Some of the chicanes were a bit too mad. It was a bit dangerous, but it was a cool place directly at the beach.
You like racing here, coming to the U.S.? Any desire to race in the Indy 500? And you've raced there in Formula One.
No. To be honest, I would be scared. I've never done an oval, and I have a lot of respect for these guys. I think it would be very difficult to say you go there and to perform at a high level. Probably you can go there, but to go there and compete against the guys who've done it for years and years and know how to place a car and go at those high speeds so close to each other and to the walls, at this stage of my career, I wouldn't do it.
Now, you mentioned your brothers. One of your brothers, Sven, runs a racing school. Do you get involved in that also?
Hardly ever. Sometimes he asks me if there's an event and people are interested in me joining. I come once in a while, but no, not often. But he's doing well. He built it by himself, and is going strong now.
Now, you're from Mönchengladbach, and I believe Heinz Harald Frentzen is from that town also. Did you guys know each other growing up?
Yes, he's a few years older, so we didn't really race together, but yeah, we knew each other, and especially our fathers knew each other, and yeah. And actually, my younger brother Sven is married to the half sister of Heinz Harald Frentzen.
Oh, well, very interesting. Now, when you were coming through the system, I know you were in the Mercedes program, Mercedes McLaren. Were you managing your own contracts, or did you have a manager?
No, I did have a manager that helped me.
Okay. Yeah, because Sebastian Vettel likes to say, I don't need a manager, I can get to the track on my own. Realistically, how important is a good manager, especially if you're coming through the system?
I think Sepp is doing a fantastic job, and he can do it, but you need to be able to judge yourself well enough. I think for me it was the right step to take a manager. For me it worked better with a manager than without. Nowadays I do things by myself. So everybody has to judge for himself, and not like also as a racing driver. You cannot say, okay, Senna is my idol, I will be like him. It's not working. You have to look at your strengths, at your weaknesses, and just try it and get the best out of it.
Any of your kids interested in becoming a racing driver?
I got 3 kids, and maybe the smallest one, but he's still quite young, and let's see.
Now, your fellow German, Nico Rosberg, retired, you know, a few days after winning the championship. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, it surprised me a lot. I don't and didn't follow F1 very closely anymore, but of course I follow it, and yeah, it was a huge surprise, but in hindsight, it is understandable, and I think it's a very brave decision and shows that he's got a very strong character.
Great. Okay, I really appreciate your time. Will you please give a message to our listeners? We have listeners all over the world.
To any special name or...
F1 Weekly is the name.
F1 Weekly. Hi, I'm Nick Heidfeld, and I hope you enjoyed my interview with F1 Weekly. Have a good time.
Yeah. And can you also say hi, I'm Nick Heidfeld, and you're listening to F1 Weekly, please.
Yes. Hi, I'm Nick Heidfeld, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Thank you, Sean.
Nick, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And real quickly, Nas, I got to get to 50 words from the F1 Weekly Forum Familia.
Okay, sir.
Okay, Cosmos says, inability to pass coupled with everyone having one pit stop strategy produced one of the dullest F1 races in recent memory. Fact that there hasn't been one reply to this thread 10 hours after the race speaks volumes. Ye says, indeed, I lost an hour's sleep because our clocks went forward and I wasted 2 hours watching this at 5 a.m. The only ray of light might be that Mercedes have lost some edge. Tricky Dick says, well, this race was very boring. I don't think anything decent happened. Leon Bray, took a Mercedes strategy stuff up to enable Ferrari to win. Wider tires and revised aero, and the racing result is still the same. Can't overtake. Hopefully the slower circuits will help. Chemic says, a flyer in the opening laps of Zarco in his debut, followed by awesome battles with Rossi, Dovi, and Vinales. Fantastic race. Oh, F1 was on this weekend? And finally, Kaysen. What with it being the first day of summertime and a race on 6 a.m. local time and 5 a.m. in real money, I had a dilemma about watching it live. Glad I didn't. Hell, Vettel overtook Mr. Hamilton following the latter's pit stop and won the end. Well, there you go, Nasser. It looks like a lot of people are not happy with this Grand Prix. At least it's not as happy as we are in the F1 Weekly Palatial Studios.
Well, you know, I was able to find happiness in this event at 1 in the morning, but I can understand, you know, it's everybody has their own way of looking at things, and no problem there. But hopefully things will get better, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I think me and you were just so in need of any kind of F1, you know?
Yeah, and talking of F1, what did you think? We didn't even talk about how the cars looked, the tires and this and that.
I think the cars look pretty good.
Yes, they look. Yeah, I love that lowered rear wing. The tires are fast.
The rear wings are unbelievable, and they're so low and they're dark. When they're coming down the straightaway into the camera, you can almost not see the wing. It was an interesting optical illusion. But I really like the pink scheme on the Sahara Force India. Let's just hope Renault does better in China.
Yeah, though the pink Panther looks pretty good. But I have to say, hopefully they will get rid of these stupid shark fins. If you look at these cars from the side and picture them without the fin, these are very beautiful cars.
Yes, they're looking good. I like the tires. And the only thing is, Fernando needs to sit in the camping chair.
Yeah, I think pretty soon he'll be on a futon.
Well, as long as he's getting sponsorship, that's all that counts, Ness. Anyway, keep up the good work. I'll see you in Shanghai. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Thank you, sir.
But no one understands him but his woman,
John Jack.